Well, Patty Starr's with us now. She's president of the Ghost Chasers International. She is a world-renowned ghost hunter, more than 30 years of paranormal research and ghost investigations. She's a pro. She's an active as a ghost researcher, author, lecturer, consultant, dowser, and teacher. And Patty has taught ghost hunting courses at the Bluegrass Community and Technical College in Lexington, Kentucky for 8 years. Here she is on Coast to Coast. Hey, Patty, how are you?
Oh, good morning, George. Such an honor to be on your show. Well, thank you so much.
Glad you're here. I used to go out to Lexington to the Red Mile all the time.
Oh,
just
wow.
Loved it out there.
Love the horses, huh?
Love the horses, the whole atmosphere. It was just, it's really a quaint town.
Oh,
really.
I love Lexington, Kentucky. I swear, I tell people it's got, definitely God's country.
Yeah, it's quieter than Louisville, but it's a great town.
It is. I love it here.
So for more than 30 years, you've been a paranormal researcher.
Mm-hmm.
Something got you started in that.
Well, I don't think I'm much different than a lot of ghost hunters out there. It's just that as a child, I was able to sense things, hear things, feel things. I had a lot of experiences. And then, of course, your parents, you know what, they want to protect you and say, oh, honey, that's just your imagination. You were dreaming. But then as I got older, I realized it was not my imagination. And then the curiosity set in. It's like, how can this happen? How can this be? Because it's not the way I was raised. It's not the way I was raised to believe or think. As things continued to happen, I made a decision that I would not be afraid of it and that I would go into it and see what marvels that I could find out.
How did you use your investigating techniques as a ghost hunter?
Well, first of all, I just started out basically as just using my own intuitiveness, trying to find out, going into a place, what was there, why it was there, you know, that type of thing. And then later on, I decided to bring in my camera and noticed that I was getting some really weird things, especially around my children back in the 70s. And then that kind of progressed onto actually trying to record and seeing if I could get anything to come back and answer me, which was, to my greatest joy, did start happening. And then I proceeded to go ahead and use these camcorders. Of course, that was way before infrared.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually I thought, wow, I want to really start to include the scientific, the technology, the metaphysical, psychic, all of it. So then I started getting more interested in meters, like your EMF meters. And then, of course, when I got interested in the meters, that led into studies about how energy affects us, how the electromagnetic field affects each and every one of us, and how the geomagnetic field affects the world in a whole. And then that just led on to the infrared thermometers, and then on to other scientific equipment that could be brought in. And then that led me to start studying quantum physics. And, of course, don't ask me to explain it, but in order to study it, it helped me to understand. And so I feel that as we are open to more and diverse types of experiments, and trying different things and methods, constantly my mind I think, oh, this is the way it is, and then something else comes up new, and then that changes my whole perception. And so I think that's what's so wonderful about this field.
One of the frustrating parts of investigating the paranormal, whether it's Bigfoot, UFOs, or ghosts, lack of evidence or not being able to find the kind of evidence you need to convince other people.
Well, you know, George, that is such an interesting question, and I love it. I guess for me as an individual, and when I answer questions, I always tell people my question, when I answer you, it's based on my research, my experience. So it doesn't necessarily make it fact or true to someone else. But when I'm investigating, I guess for me, I'll never be able to prove that there's any ghosts or spirits or any of that thing, but I do enjoy getting the different evidence that I get. And I guess I'm not out there to, you know, to prove anything to anyone. I think I started out with the research basically to answer a lot of my own personal questions, like, is there life after this? What is it? Do we just transition, or is it
Did
over?
You answer those questions for yourself?
Pardon me?
Did you answer those questions
oh,
for
definitely.
Yourself?
Definitely with the experience and the results that I was getting and the answers when I would ask questions, it just blew me away. And so for me, it did answer those questions.
Every ghost investigator has one favorite story. I bet you do.
Well, gosh, I have tons. I have ghost stories where People will start to explain things to me, and then right in the middle of the investigation, these things will come out. For instance, do we have time for me to tell one experience?
Yep, sure do.
Okay. This experience involved an investigation that I was doing in Bardstown, Kentucky at the old Talbot Tavern. I was down in the basement, done many investigations there, and while I was checking out the area, one of the kitchen managers came down, and he said, "May I ask you a question?" Which I get that a lot, and he wanted to ask me if a ghost could actually visit us in our dreams. And I asked him, why did he ask? And he said that him and his brother were twins, and a few years ago they had a friend that died. And what had happened was that bothered his brother is about 3 or 4 months after his best friend had died. He would come to him in a dream, and he said he would look great in the dream until he would turn around and face him. And then when he would, he noticed that he had no eyes. He just had these big black sockets where his eyes should be. And it would freak him out. It would freak anybody out.
Of course.
And so he said he would have the dream over and over, and then eventually he started admitting it to some of the friends. And it being a real small town, that story got back to the boy that had died, got back to his mother. And when his mother heard that her son's best friend was dreaming of her son appearing to him without eyes, it really shocked her, because nobody knew that they had donated his eyes as an organ donor. And so for him to dream that and not knowing, it was rather shocking. And I thanked him for the story, and he left, and I continued to do some of my investigation. And he came back about an hour later. He was all dressed up in a suit, and he wanted to introduce me to his girlfriend. And at that time, I was using my dowsing rods, and I was asking questions about things that were going on in the basement. And he asked me if I could show him how it worked. And as I lifted one of my rods and said, well, what you do is when you hold the rod, and then all of a sudden I got what I call a hit. My rod was very vibrating. And I said, oh, wait, we're in luck. And so I started asking yes and no questions. And I was very shocked that I got a spirit that had only been passed about 4 years. And as I continued to ask questions, it came to me that this particular spirit died in a car accident. And also, and then other things came to me. His age was 16 when he died. He was he worked at the Talbot Tavern in the kitchen. And then the guy looked at me and he goes, oh my gosh, that is my friend. And I said, you're kidding. So we asked a couple of other questions, and we found out that the reason that he had manifested to us as far as communicating through the rods, that he was there because a very special thing was happening that night. His two brothers were graduating from high school. And that was just the most amazing thing. Then I listened to my recorder, and I called his name, and then I asked him, I said, if you're here, can you appear for us? Because I'm going to take some pictures. And as I started taking, I'm taking pictures, and when I got home and listened to my recorder, he came through, and he says, I can't really give one. And he did not come through any form as in a picture, but I did get the EVP explaining to me that he could not form. But the fact that he explained to me and spoke to us while all that was going on, that was pretty incredible.
Super, super. With children, do you think parents should get their children involved in ghost investigating?
You know, that has been such a controversy, with the TV shows and people, being so protective, of course, of their children.
Sure.
And wondering what in the world. Right now, I speak at many, many libraries during the summer, and I do children's programs. And, of course, the first thing that I want to do is to help eliminate a lot of the fear that children, may feel when they have these experiences. I know that we all come from different backgrounds, religious beliefs, and so therefore it's almost as if you have to treat each individual child differently because of the vast circumstances mm-hmm. that could be taking place at that moment in time. I do think it should be understood to not make the child more frightened, and also I think a lot of it too has, because they are brought into an environment that's already in place. Sometimes the parents' belief or the teacher's belief, that will conflict with the child as well, like it did with me. So I guess I have more of a sympathy for children that are going through this if they're not in an environment where it can be nurtured or they can be assisted. And I really, for me, my own belief, I really don't feel like there's a lot of the evil and demonic that you do see on TV. It just seems like every corner you turn, it's like evil or demonic. And all the years I've been investigating, I've run into hateful and spiteful and scared and irritated, but never evil and demonic. And I'm not saying that that doesn't exist. I just don't think it exists on the level that we see it.
All right. Stay with us, Patty. We're going to come back in just a moment and take phone calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, we're going to your phone calls now with Patty Starr. Patty, your website, ghosthunter.com. It's got to be well sought after. That's a great URL.
Oh, I got that URL really early in the internet world.
I bet you could sell that for a pretty good penny.
I probably could, but I wouldn't.
Well, let's go now to Lafayette, Louisiana. No, we'll start with Brenda. She's been on hold a long time. Valencia, west of the Rockies. Go ahead there, Brenda.
Yes. Hi. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi, Brenda.
Hi. Good morning to both of you. I was calling, is there such a thing as a ghost that's alive?
What do you mean by that?
I know. It's like I'm being haunted by a person, but this person is alive.
Maybe he's been possessed. So what does this person do?
Oh, no, you know, nobody's going to believe this. I swear, he forces me to move my limbs sometimes when I don't want to.
To move your what?
Limbs, like he'll force me to move my arms
or
my legs. Yes, he turns on the lights sometimes.
Is he in your house?
Well, I don't see him.
Well, how do you know he's physical?
Well, he's alive. I mean, I know that.
What do you mean by alive? See, I think you're confused about the difference between alive and dead. First of all, everything's alive. Even a spirit is alive,
yes,
technically.
Sir.
Wouldn't you say that, Patty?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I agree.
I think she's haunted by something, but I don't know what.
Well, I've had cases where I have experienced what I thought was a presence. And I felt, I knew the presence, and then I thought, no, that can't be. That is, they're still alive. But this is how I translated it for myself, that I was picking up on their residual energy because they're in my life a lot and because I see them a lot. A lot of times we do leave a residual energy in an area, a place where we may walk a lot or sit a lot or talk a lot. And sometimes I can actually turn and I can see that energy going on and I identify it. And then I think, wow, that's really strange because they're still alive. So that's how I've learned about the different the hauntings. You have residual hauntings. You have intelligent hauntings. You have portal hauntings. You have poltergeist hauntings. So I've just sort of put that in a category of a residual type. It's not really a haunting, but it's scary like a haunting, so we refer to it as a haunting, but it's more of a residual energy. And if you get close enough to that residual energy because there is something going on there, it can affect muscle twitching or thought or sight or a feeling.
Absolutely. Lafayette, Louisiana, we go east of the Rockies now. Go ahead, Sal.
Yes. I'm so excited to be on the radio. This is my first time.
Oh, good.
I am from Lafayette, Louisiana. I want to make it real quick. It's been about 10 or 12 years. I started seeing things from the corners of my eyes. I'd look, and they're gone.
And it's gone, like shadows?
Yeah, like not really shadow people, but shadows itself.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's something wrong with my eyes, or we're seeing things throughout the years. It's like come a little bit close into my field of vision. There's one night, which happened about two years ago. It went right between me and the blinds, and I was just staring right at the blinds, and it just moved. It just kind of creeped me out, but I felt comfortable with it. I don't know why. And one more thing real quick, because I know y'all probably don't have enough time. And me, myself, I'm into meditation and calming myself down and relaxation and all that. I kind of feel like I've developed some type of heightened awareness to where I could feel something by me all the time.
Well, and you probably do sell. I mean, there's no doubt. It could be your guardian angel. It could be anything, Patty.
Right, absolutely. And as far as the shadow, of course, when people start talking to me about quickly seeing things in the corner of their eye, you know, we do have these eye floaters. And sometimes, you know, sometimes I like to make sure that that's not the situation. And the way you can tell if it's an eye floater, I'll always put it, you know, they're kind of stationary in your eye anyway, and it will always sort of appear either to the left or to the right constantly. And so we like to eliminate that. Of course, many things can cause shadows, but I do see a lot of shadows myself, so I do know that that energy is out there. I do know that that shape does appear. And a lot of people think because it's dark that it might be an indication of it being, you know, like evil. But I found out through just my own experience that I tend to get more of a protection. Like you said, it didn't frighten you. You felt comfortable with it. So a lot of times I feel like that sometimes that might be a form of protection for you.
Okay, Sal, thanks. Next up, Santa Monica, California. Hey, John, right around the corner. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you, George?
Good.
Hi, Patty.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing really well. My name is John.
There's
really three incidents, if I can describe them very quickly, that have happened over the past 6 years. One of them was very quick. My wife and I were asleep, and in the middle of the night, we live in a very old building. It was built in 1928. It's a historical building. It's a beautiful building in Santa Monica, real close to the promenade. And it's a classic structure. And one night the stereo, it was like 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, just went on. Mm-hmm. And music started playing. We came out. We thought somebody had broken in. I went out in the living room. She came out. We put our robes on, looked, and you know, we were just startled.
Was it plugged in? If it wasn't plugged in, then that would really be strange.
No, it was plugged. You know, we keep it plugged in all the time, but we turn it off every night before we go to bed.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And you know, but it just started playing, mm-hmm. and you know, it's never done that before. The other thing that's happened is we have a smoke alarm in the hallway right outside our bedroom, and the smoke alarm's up really high. They have really high ceilings here, about 12-14 foot ceilings, and we have to have a stepladder if I. Anyway, the smoke alarm, this has happened 3 or 4 times, the smoke alarm. The smoke alarm just went off. It just goes off. And we're thinking, well, if the window's open, you know, there's dust or something coming in. But this one particular time, there wasn't anything. And I got the stepladder, and I took some dusting, a can of dust off, the air dust off. And I stood on top of I took the cap off the smoke alarm, and the thing was going, bang, it was really loud. This was like 3 o'clock in the morning or so, and I was right, my face was right next to it, and there was a very strange smell. It wasn't the smell of the smoke effect, it was a very strange smell, and then something passed through my face. It was a feel and a smell and a sense.
Now, let you comment on these, Patty, because we've only got 40 seconds left here. Go ahead.
Okay, well, first of all, we'll comment on the electromagnetic energy. Sometimes when there's a spirit present and they can rev up this energy, they can actually make toys work without a battery because they can get that strong. So that might have been an indication of why the radio came on. And since it's not coming on all the time, then I would not think that it would be a short or something of that nature. Now, as far as the it's really wonderful about the device, the smoking device. I also had a smoking device in an apartment, and I used to ask yes or no questions, and my smoking device would actually answer by beeping for yes and doing nothing for no. And I know that sounds really crazy, but the way I started using it is it periodically it would go off, and I'd already changed the batteries. Make sure that you are using like a really high brand battery.
Yeah, you've got to rule out the natural first, and then you look at the supernatural. Patty, thank you. Up next, our final investigator, Todd Sheets. NightWatchRadio.com. And our final investigator, Todd Sheets, began the largest part of his career as a radio show host. This soon led to the formation of the Night Watchers, which is a worldwide paranormal group with more than 3,500 members. Todd has investigated more than 60 of the nation's most haunted locations, working on his very first book about the paranormal and produces 6 radio shows with paranormal themes. He's produced and released 2 DVDs filmed during various Night Watchers investigations and is now finishing a script for a new paranormal movie to be shot in the spring of 2011. Here he is, Tachis Tani, and you're from the Kansas City area, huh?
I am.
Super. How's the weather out that way?
It's for normal for Kansas City, it's raining.
Yeah, typical, which means it's coming towards St. Louis, right?
Yeah, unfortunately. Hopefully it'll dissipate. St. Louis doesn't get as much rain as us, and I love St. Louis, by the way. So, yeah, it's a great town.
How'd you get involved in all this?
You know, I'm going to give you the short version. First of all, really, you and Art are to blame in an odd kind of way. Because, I made horror movies first. My first childhood memory was Night of the Living Dead, and I was a lifelong horror aficionado. I loved it. I'm like a walking dictionary, I guess they say, of horror movies and bad drive-in movies and stuff and pop culture. And I was really kind of recognized locally for making horror films, and a local producer wanted me to do a radio show. And I had no idea how to even think about doing a radio show because I said no several times. And I kind of developed a back-and-forth writing with Art on the internet. I was surprised the first time I wrote him because Art, not only is he one of the most amazing people ever, and none of us would be here if it wasn't for him, but he also writes you right back.
Yeah.
And so we kind of got a rapport going, and I decided to ask him, what do you think? And he said, I think you should do it, period. And that kind of pushed me in that direction, and I did it. And really, all of us owe a great debt to you and Art, because you really, the first time I ever heard the word shadow people was thanks to Art Bell and the things that you've brought. Also, George, it's such a great honor to be here. I'm a little nervous because you're heroes to me.
You know, Todd, if you and I ran into each other at a restaurant, we could sit down and keep a conversation going, and you wouldn't be nervous at all.
I believe that's true. But what happened basically was, we started the radio show. I had no idea what I was doing. I had no formal radio training, but it kind of took off. This was before, this was many, many years ago. This was, 8 years ago, before the big boom of internet radio or the paranormal boom had hit, the big popularity thing. And there's very few shows, so we really didn't have anyone else to look to as mentors but you guys. And we really kind of shot from there and wanted to do a little bit of, broadened it to include some horror movies and comic book stuff, some nerd stuff. But really, the show took off, and here I am. I don't know. I'm very thankful for that, because we have, a bunch of syndicated affiliates worldwide, over 300 and 30 stations, and people are really enjoying the show, and I owe it all to you guys and really to the people
good
listening, to our friends out there, and what happened was, you mentioned the Night Watchers doing the show, as I'm sure you get many, many letters, and people say, how can I get into this? What can I do? Or they're having problems getting into locations. And so the Ghost Hunters from the Sci-Fi Channel had started their show, and they'd only had like 4 episodes, and I met them in St. Louis doing a Roto-Rooter convention.
Grant and Todd, good people, huh?
Grant and Jason, yes.
Jason.
Amazing. Yep, amazing people. They took me in. I've become very close to them. I consider them family, and they've brought me in and, introduced me to their families. I've broke bread with them many times and done a lot of events with them, and they really brought me in as one of the family and took me under the wing, introduced me to everybody, and the next thing I know, things are taking off, and everyone's like, hey, can you help us get in these locations? So we started the Night Watchers basically so people could go to places that they couldn't normally afford to go to and do it without the upcharge that some events charge and things like that. And so, we started going around to all these locations. And really, I don't even consider myself so much an investigator as everyone else. I consider myself a very lucky guy that hangs out with cool investigators. I've learned a lot from them because, there are so many amazing people I've met because of this field, and every day is a learning experience. And, the Night Watchers continue. We're getting ready to go down to St. Augustine Lighthouse, as a matter of fact, in 2 weeks, anyone can go. That's the cool thing. That's the thing I like about it. And we don't make profit on it. We just basically ask the location, hey, what do you charge for this many people? They tell us, and we pass that on, So it's kind of a neat thing.
Tell me about one of your jobs at a haunted house attraction. What was that?
Yeah, here in Kansas City, at one time, there were a whole lot of haunted house attractions, commercial haunted houses people would go to during September and October to get scared. And a childhood friend of mine, Dennis Kingsolver, had been building one of those for a couple of years. And we kind of hooked back up after, you know, being apart a little while. You know, you move away from the neighborhood and such. And he brought me in, and I was there for 10 years building this incredible designing, you know, building. There was a group of us, a family, a close-knit family of us, that built this thing year-round just so we could be open for 2 months. But we were able to create this incredible, scary stuff. And how ironic that this building was actually haunted that we were in. The catacombs was an actual haunted building, and they had it didn't start in that building. We moved it there, but we were in that building for darn near 10 years, and it was, wow. That's when I realized that all the stuff I loved as a kid, all the books I'd read, werewolves, ghosts, you know, all that stuff you read, some of that stuff was real. And I started experiencing that at that building while I was there. You know, I was there because I was the full-timer at night. And I'd be there sometimes by myself at 2 and 3 in the morning, of course, listening to you guys getting creeped out by the ghost-to-ghost AM stories. Thank you very much.
Well, you know what? Those callers, they have experienced some incredible things, Todd.
Oh, I know. I know. Yep. And I started experiencing some of those things myself. And that's when I realized, hey, this is really kind of real. It's not just in the movies or in the books.
Now, would people come and visit you at these haunted attractions? And would they run out the door screaming?
You know, that's the weird thing. We did have customers that would come through to get scared by actors that would actually end up getting
with the makeup and everything, right?
Well, yeah, they do the whole nine yards. But there would be spots where there are no actors, where there's just walkways, and they would get pushed or slapped or talked to. And they were like, how did you do that? What are you talking about? We didn't do that. I don't know. There's nobody there. There's no actor there. Sometimes I'd be following people, and they'd say, hey, someone just grabbed me. Well, there was no one there. I was the one following them, and I knew it. You know, I was the manager there, and I knew that there was no one else in that hallway but this group and myself. So there were some pretty crazy things that went on in that building.
There seems to be an incredible boom in investigations and people just falling in love with this kind of genre. What's happening to these people?
I honestly think we have, first of all, Jason and Grant and the Ghost Hunters show on the Sci-Fi Channel, they took a chance, and I think we have that to thank for the opening of a lot of the floodgate. Also, shows like yours and like Night Watch, where we've brought on guests because, as you know, we wouldn't even have a show if it wasn't for the great guests we get every week, and they're opening a lot of minds, and people are not afraid to talk about it so much anymore. It's more of an open subject, as well as many other TV
shows. They're not ridiculed as much as they used to be.
Right, and I think that's the great thing about it, is there's so many doors opening, and, you know, so many things. Now, you know, with every good, there's a little bit of bad. You got some people that are just coming in because I heard some people mentioning earlier the thrill seekers and stuff, and that's okay too.
It's fun. Right?
I think that's the real thing for me, is I kind of like the fact that even though I'm learning a lot and I take it seriously, sometimes it's kind of like being a kid tromping
Absolutely.
Through that cool abandoned house.
Todd, wouldn't we do what we're doing if we weren't having the kind of fun doing it?
That's exactly what it is. You know, that's exactly it.
You have to have the fun, and then once you do that, everything else falls into place. Your paranormal investigating, is it primarily just ghosts, or you blanketed all over now?
I like it all. I like it all. I've met so many cool people that have taken me down. I just talked to Kathleen Martin, as a matter of fact, this week on my show. And she, of course, you know Kathleen and Betty and Barney Hill. What an amazing story that is. And I'm really into the whole UFO thing, and Audrey Stump from Starborn Support and all these guys. And they've really brought me in. You know, Matt Moniz and all those guys brought me into the Bigfoot and the UFO. And I'm like, wow, you know, what an amazing universe of discovery.
I want disclosure, Todd. I just don't know if it's ever going to come.
Yeah, I don't either. And sometimes I wonder if it would be as much fun if it does.
Well, that's a good point. Depends on what they tell us. Todd, stay with us. We're going to come back and take phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Todd, before we go to calls, tell me about this musical project you're involved with.
Oh, wow.
What are we doing here?
I didn't know you were going to mention that. Yeah, I have an interesting musical side deal that I do. It's kind of a little scary. It's kind of horror-themed. It's called Dissension, and we also do another one called Jedi Superstar, which is a nerd thing. So, yeah, I'm involved in that. But the Dissension thing's more of it's really weird because we've kind of encountered the paranormal in that too, because they have us come and play at haunted locations because we wear all the costumes and do the big theatrical thing. So it's kind of fun, and people can hear that if they go to it's really funny because the website even scary, wheredemonsdwell.com. I mean, come on, you know, it's pretty scary stuff.
Do you get all dressed up for Halloween?
You know, usually I do the Batman thing because I'm a Batman fanatic, and I have a suit that is movie grade. I even have a Keaton cowl that they pulled for me from the original Keaton mold at Warner Brothers. I have one of those. So, yeah, I'm a Batman fanatic.
You went all out on that one, didn't you?
Yeah, it's well, I do it also for charity for kids. So, you know, it's a double good thing. So it kind of works out.
It's fun to keep kids happy.
That's really, really an amazing thing, actually.
Let's take some calls. Simeon in Sacramento, first-time caller. Simeon, go ahead.
Hi, I hope I'm not too late. I kind of had a question or maybe a comment about the lady that called in earlier about the spirit that was alive that was haunting her.
Okay, go ahead.
I was just wondering, have you ever heard of astroprogenics?
Astroprogenics?
It's where it's usually tied in with, like, satanic rituals where a person will put themselves in a trance, and I've heard of it quite a few times, and they'll actually put their spirit out to haunt or torment, and actually I've heard of physically attack people, and it's while, the person is still alive, they're just putting themselves in a trance, and then they're sending their spirit out towards someone that they're trying to haunt or harm or whatnot.
Some beliefs do that. I've not heard of the phrase astral progenics, but I've heard of people trying to do that. Putting curses on people is one way of doing it.
Yeah, I was just wondering if maybe that was something that she was experiencing, if she was considering it someone that was alive but still haunting her. It just kind of sounded like the same thing there.
Do you investigate demonic spirits at all, Todd?
You know, I don't. I it's really odd for me because I'm not sure what to call any given thing out there. I think there's a lot of people, and that brings me, a little bit of, it's hard because a lot of people claim to be experts or professional investigators, and I personally don't know how we can know that yet. We're not that far. It's still such an infancy as far as investigations go. It's a very new field. It's in its infancy, and we really can't be professionals. I mean, you can be a professional brake builder because you know how to do that, and we have the proof of brakes, but we don't have all the proof we need yet. It's an untested field, so everything right now is theories, ideologies. It's really us trying to figure things out, but no one can possibly be an expert or know the answers, and we really can't tell if it's a demon or an interdimensional being, or if what are shadow people? Are they a phasing of some sort because people are going between dimensions? Are they time travelers? There's so many things they could be. We can't really give an answer. So I don't get into the whole demon thing. I mean, for fun and horror movies, yeah, but when I'm investigating, I mean, I've really experienced some shadow people at Waverly Hills, and I was 5 feet from them, but I wouldn't think they were demonic.
Next up, we go to Katie, truck driving in Ohio. Hey, Katie, good morning.
Hi, George. Nice to talk to you. I haven't talked for a while.
Give us the old honk on the truck if you can.
Oh, it's not working.
Not working. Uh-oh. We're calling DOT on you.
Yeah, I got to get that fixed.
Yes, you do. Go ahead.
I just want to know what you thought about. A couple years ago, I was driving in northern Ohio on a two-lane highway, and it was early November, and the fields on either side, so it was all plowed, and it was full moon, so I could see really well. In fact, I'd seen some deer about 300 feet off the road running. So I could see really well, and I was driving along, and there was another car coming towards me, and all of a sudden, this dog just appeared running across the road. It stopped in my lane. I hit my brakes, even though I knew there was nothing I could do to avoid it. The other car slammed on their brakes. I heard of their rubber when they hit their brakes, and just before I would have hit it, it disappeared.
That's a great story.
Wow. The strangest thing. There was nothing on the front of the truck, so.
Well, you didn't hit him.
No.
He went right through you and disappeared, but you didn't hit him.
But I know the other car saw it because they slammed on their brakes, too.
Todd, did you ever come across demonic dog and pet stories where they're beady red eyes?
That is such an amazing story, and it kind of reminds me of, I was talking to my good friend Marcus Leader, and he was telling me one time about interdimensional travelers or interdimensional species of animals that may get too close to a rift. Like sometimes electromagnetic fields might be so strong they create a rift or a paper-thin veil between the two, I guess, areas to, you know, they, it's hard to describe. But sometimes these creatures might cross over. And like the Beast of Bray Road, some people think, some people say it's a werewolf. Some people say it's an interdimensional beast that travels through a dimensional portal. Is that true? I don't know, but I sure think it's interesting. And I've heard a lot of stories like that. We've had a lot of people on the show about that. And I think it could be happening. I mean, there's too many people in too many parts of the world that tell similar stories for it not to be real.
Scott is in Chico, California. Go ahead, Scotty.
Good morning. Good
morning.
I wanted to tell you about an experience I found out afterwards from my mom. And she's kind of a sensitive kind of person. But growing up in El Segundo, there was a house, and I always hated the closet and also that window, especially at night, because there was an orange tree, and I always thought it was just the orange tree. But I had a lot of nightmares there, too, and I talked to my mom later about it, and apparently I didn't realize this, but the people that owned it before had a kid who was a really bad kid, or maybe he had mental problems, but he used to beat up kids and do things to them so much that they took him out of school. But they found out later after he killed himself that underneath the house, he kind of honed it all out so he can walk under there. And that happened to be right under where I slept. Jeez. And he used to take cats and stuff and, like, take them apart and torture them. And my mom said quite a few times she saw this little cloudy kind of lightning kind of little orb around me, and she said she would come into my room because she'd hear me, like, having nightmares. And she would see this thing. And then I guess after a while, she said she, like, tried to cast it away by talking about religion.
Did it work for her?
She said it did. But I didn't realize any of this. I just knew I hated that closet, and I hated the window, which was right under the entrance underneath the house. The little tunnel thing he did was right under my room.
Oh.
So that was just something that she told me later. I don't know why she didn't tell me at the time, maybe because I was too young.
She would have scared the heck out of you.
Yeah, you'd have been an adult.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. So I wanted to also ask you, are you a fan of Matt Ullman's music? He did, like, the Diablo game series music.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I love that guy.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, I'm still trying to find the soundtrack to the Blood Golem, because when I hear that, I almost want to throw up with the, it's like this sloshing kind of
we gotta check into that. Hey, Todd, we're out of time. I want to thank you for being on the program. Todd Sheets, his website, nightwatchradio.com, and go to it and support him. Support all our guests who are out there trying to unravel the strange and mysterious world of the supernatural. Hey, by the way, I'll be on a plane tomorrow. Art's filling in. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, thanks tonight to Chris Boros, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.